Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy. And the title of today's show is Hamilton Cops a Penalty. And that title provided by young fan Matthew Summerfield on Twitter. Runner-up is England won on penalties from Dewey, also on Twitter. We're also joined here tonight by Matt Trumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
I think it's going pretty well. I'm of the opinion that today's show will be, well, let's go with historic, shall we?
It has been a historic Grand Prix, and I was trying to get across to my son. Like, when you've got little kids, you are going to talk to them about that 2021 season at the end of COVID times when Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton were playing 4D chess at 1,000 miles an hour around the greatest tracks in Grand Prix history.
Yeah, and, you know, I was really thinking the free tire choice, but what you said too.
Yes, and I have to say, we've got so many topics to cover tonight that actually the sprint race kind of moves to the back of the queue. If we don't get quite to the sprint race discussion, we'll move that to a dedicated topic in a news show. But there's so much to cover. Obviously, there was the event, which we will cover up front. There is also the fact that, my goodness, Ferrari were absolutely spectacular. They took it all the way. And like I've said, they've always been my favorite team. It's nothing to do with the fact that I had Friday hospitality at Silverstone.
You have been bought and paid for.
Perhaps, but it was undeniably a fantastic fight from Charles Leclerc. And so we will discuss that in the chase section of the show. But it is important to note as well that one of the top drivers in Formula One had a big, big old chance. So we're hearing that Max Verstappen is broadly fine, but feeling shaken and dizzy after the shunt. So we wish you all the best, Max Verstappen. I'm sure you tune in to Missed Apex, but he is already one of the fiercest drivers in F1 history. We wish him a quick recovery so we can get this battle back on the road.
Indeed. 51G, according to Christian Horner, and lateral impact. So that's a tough one on a driver. Good to see him out and moving about and looking forward to him being back at Hungary and ready for redemption.
And just go easiest on the comments, because this has been one of the most divisive social media races, not just with the sprint race stuff, but the second the incident happened between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton, the instinct was, oh, I wonder whether social media will be lovely, polite and measured, or a swamp of seething hate.
And yeah, we knew the answer, didn't we?
Before we get to the show, we just want to tell you that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by our race analyst, Alex Jeansy Van Jean. What an afternoon, Alex. Did you also, like me, get in trouble at home?
Yeah, I got told repeatedly that we have neighbours who don't want to hear me screaming at the top of my lungs at the incredible action that we had for however long that race was today. It felt like it went on for ages, but in such a good way.
I was covered on both sides by football fans who have been going absolutely nuts for weeks. So I said to my wife, you know, the gap's down to 3 seconds. I'm just going to warn you, it might get a little emotional. And I got the, we have neighbours, you know, and it's like, look, we've been listening to them screaming all through the Euros. This is happening.
Yeah, definitely. We need our time in the sun. And boy, is there sun today. It's like nearly 30 degrees here. And I might get more glossy as the show goes on, as the temperature still is ridiculous here.
Yeah, those watching on the video can see the evidence of my trip out to Maggots and Beckett's on Friday, where I caught all of the sun. We're also joined, thanks for returning, by Daniel Clark. Hello, DJ.
There we go. I don't know what happened there. It completely messed me up. How you doing, Spanners?
Welcome to the podcast. I am doing very well. It's great to have you on. Remind us where in America land you've come from.
I am in the wonderful sprawling city of Los Angeles, where it is nice and breezy and balmy and aggressively nice. So I will rub that into all of you.
Oh, it's like the Canada of America. You're aggressively nice.
Yeah, well, the city, the weather, not the city.
Fair enough. That's your panel, Matt Two Rumpets, Alex Jeansy Van Jean, and DJ. Let's get on to our race review. Now, Matt, normally this is the time where we would ask you where the race was won and lost. However, we've had this tradition over the last year or so. When there is a big event, a big kind of red letter event that has set social media on fire, we would address that first. And had it not been for that lap one incident, it probably would have been the sprint races. But really, the Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton incident overshadowed everything at the beginning of the race. It was like the whole weekend didn't exist and social media was on fire.
Well, on fire, more like burned down into a toxic, festering swamp. Such was the fierceness of people's opinions about this. I mean, you know, admittedly, you know, minor contact that just had a major consequence on the championship.
That is an interesting way to put it. It was, on the scale of things, a relatively minor contact. But I will say that for all the whose fault is that we've ever had. Oh, that's a good point. This is a whose fault is it?
Whose fault is it?
So for all the whose fault is it that we've had on Missed Apex, this has probably been the closest to an out-and-out racing incident. There's been cries of racing incident everywhere. I don't like to do that because I feel like it's a bit of a cop-out sometimes. I like to examine where it went wrong. And I like to examine who was most to blame. But in this case, there's a couple of different angles. So we will do whose fault is it, for sure. But I think I just want to start by saying both drivers consented to this accident. And I'd like, yeah, good. I'm getting lots of nods from my panel. Matt.
Well, I love it because, you know, you asked me on WhatsApp earlier what my personal opinion was. Mm. And I said, basically, if I'm on the outside, I can draw a line leaving a car's width to the inside of cops. And if I'm on the inside, I can draw a line leaving the car's width to the outside on cops. And then if I look at both those lines together, they intersect. And I think, you know, yeah, that's how I like to sum this particular one up.
Yeah. And I mean, Van Jean, we've long talked about drivers making other drivers decide. So, you know, Senna was much lauded for the, I'm going to put ourselves in a situation. It's up to you. Do you want to crash or not crash? And it just feels like both those guys did that today. Two of the greatest drivers in F1 history, two of the fiercest wheel-to-wheel drivers in history, both went, you want to crash or not? And they both went, okay, I guess if you don't duck out, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Max has been doing it all season to Lewis, to be honest. Imola, he threw it up the inside, made Lewis make the decision. Spain threw it up the inside, made Lewis make the decision. And every single time, Lewis has backed out. And you could tell from the sprint race, these two were going to go at it, hammer and tongs, and Lewis wasn't going to lie down on this one. You then saw them go into Brooklands, and when they went into Brooklands, I thought that's where the crash was going to happen, to be honest.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't really know how Max got that stopped, but if you notice, Lewis moved aside, let the space, let him have it. But to be fair, both drivers could have avoided this today.
Yeah.
Lewis could have backed out, Max could have given more space. However, the reason I put it in Max's court is because Max is the championship leader with a really big championship lead. And if you are the championship leader and there is someone who is in the slower car having a lunge at you down the inside, you give them the room because you can have a chance to fight them back afterwards. All Max has done now is throw away his championship lead.
And I think I like this because before we get into the technicalities of whose fault was it from like a racing point of view, it's interesting. What would you say if you were in those drivers' corners, DJ? Because if you were both their mums, absolutely no doubt that you would, both mums are going to be saying, right, you're a silly boy there and you risked a lot. Don't be silly. And if you were the driver coach, you might be looking at those situations from a more psychological point of view. Like who, forget the incident, forget the penalty, forget the race result. Like who won out of that?
Well, you said it yourself, Spanners. It's the Senna incident. It's the mental game of doing that. Both of them had to put themselves there to be able to prove dominance. And we knew going in from what we learned during the sprint race and during qualifying that the Mercedes was fast in a straight line. The Red Bull was slow in a straight line. And so Max had to stay ahead to try to keep that advantage. It's all mental. You can't back out of it. It's first lap. You go for it.
Max, Matt, it was the perfect storm, wasn't it? Because DJ's just, you know, he spelled it out. Max had to defend the lead because Mercedes was strong this weekend. That car was strong this weekend. Had there not been a bit of a squiffy rear end from Lewis in qualifying, I think it probably would have been half a second. In the Friday qualifying, he might have looked much more dominant than he was. So Verstappen, he knew he had to defend lap one. It was all or nothing. And Hamilton, look how he was held up by Leclerc later on. He knew he had to take his chance from Verstappen early.
If I'm Max, I need one chance. If I'm behind Hamilton, I need to be at a place with an advantage and a chance at it. What interests me so much about this is that on the one hand, you're absolutely right. From an mental psychological point of view, this battle was about dominance. Max was not backing down, neither was Hamilton, and the inevitable happened. But if I'm looking at championship points, I'm sitting there going, well, if Max had just simply Leclerc'd it to the outside, he might have been able to pass Hamilton. Red Bull might have been able to work a strategy miracle. After all, let's remember that the qualifying where Mercedes looked so fast was near about 15 degrees cooler than the race today. And I think that hands a big advantage to Verstappen and Red Bull, if you ask me. But let's assume that the worst happens. He finishes second. He loses 7 points of his 33-point championship lead. Instead, he gave away 25 points. And I just got to ask, if I'm looking at the larger picture, maybe that's the experience difference between Hamilton and Verstappen talking.
It could well be. Van Damme, Marcel, in our Slack live stream channel said, this is gloves off. This is Senna and Prost all over again. And this is it, isn't it, Alex? This is absolutely gloves off now. Every single time they go at it, it's a psychological battle. I've compared it to poker in the past where, you know, you have your hands, but actually your opponents don't know. So if you keep pushing all your chips in with confidence, people will fold. And Hamilton has folded time after time, not just this season, but going back previous seasons. Do you remember him kind of letting Max through because, well, you're not in the title fight, it doesn't matter. That psychological battle continued. And that's why Max has won, what is it, like 3 or 4 wheel-to-wheel battles already this season? And Hamilton's folded every time. So in a way, I can't blame Max for thinking Hamilton would fold this time.
I can. And the only reason I can is because of the aggressiveness of both of them in the start of the sprint race and the start of the race today. Lewis was super aggressive, more aggressive than we've seen him all season. And Max was struggling with tyre warm-up, which is why Lewis was so much quicker at that particular point of the lap. Wasn't really a race, was it? And that's what caused Max the problem. So Max went super defensive and Lewis saw it as, I know what happened yesterday. You got ahead of me and you disappeared. I'm not letting that happen. Max isn't stupid and he'd know that that was the case. So him being ahead and Lewis being behind was the key point of what they actually wanted to achieve. Yeah. So, and then it came to the actual point of impact where, you know, I've got other reasons why I can give it to Max.
Okay, so Dave says, yeah, Hamilton had more to lose before, but now he doesn't. But that was also true, Dave, before in this season. He also had things to lose this season and had yielded to Verstappen. Perhaps in the past, he'd felt like, well, we still have the overall car advantage and the triple headers showed that, well, maybe you don't have that car advantage for sure. So now I do have to, you know, make sure that I'm in there and fighting. DJ.
Well, I think the other thing to take in mind into all of this is that, I mean, we always joke about, you know, these are the best fans in the world, that Hamilton always says that from the podium.
Yeah.
This is his home race.
Yeah.
And he has always said this is the race he wants to win more than anything. And I think that probably played into that aggressive of a maneuver that he wanted to get this race, championship be damned.
Yes, kind of. I can agree with that. And certainly later on in the race, when it came to would he bother hunting down Leclerc, it's like, yes, this is Silverstone. He definitely wants to win at Silverstone. But overall, in the kind of overall view of this championship, this was a must-win race, Matt. This was a race where Hamilton and Mercedes really needed a win. And you could feel it in the radio messages at the end of the race. That correspondence between who's the race engineer for Lewis Hamilton, Bono. And they're saying, like, do you think we can catch him? And he's like, yes, you blinking well can, Lewis, is what he said exactly on the radio. And then afterwards, Toto coming on, and they just were so pumped and hyped. They had a wind under their sails, and that could account for a lot of Lewis Hamilton's extra aggression in those wheel-to-wheel battles today.
Yeah, you are correct. Mercedes needed to draw a line here and stop the bleeding. They've been losing points. They've been off the pace and having a hard time explaining it. They show up with the upgrades. They have the great qualifying on Friday, and then they lose the place on Saturday. And so it was everything to play for from Mercedes' point of view to win this race. And Lewis, I mean, you're 33 points down. Well, you know, your mentality about what kind of chances I'm taking are going to be entirely different at that point.
All right, Alex, let's talk about Verstappen as a wheel-to-wheel racer. He has been, throughout his whole career, right from like Toro Rosso days, he has been amazing and he has been aggressive. And that's been one of the fantastic things about watching Verstappen in wheel-to-wheel action. He has been entertaining. He is win or bin. Obviously, today it was bin. But it was such an aggressive defense, all of lap one. I mean, let's talk about lap one. Lewis Hamilton down the inside sort of forces Verstappen wide. So there's kind of the first move in that battle. Verstappen has to go off track in T1 to defend. And then you've got that move that you touched upon into Brooklands as well. And that, when that happened, I went, oh my goodness. Like, because Hamilton had it. I felt like he had the outside round Brooklands and Verstappen just shut the door. It was fully like, well, it was win or bin. That was the most aggressive move of that lap.
Yeah, that was actually more aggressive than the bit where they had contact. But as I stated, Lewis gave him the room. He saw it coming. He telegraphed it. And he's like, OK, we can have that bit of space. You're obviously not going to let me have that piece of road. So there you go. It's yours. But that's why he got the cut back. And it's because of that aggressive move, he got the cut back coming out of Luffield, which gave him the run up to Copse. And then you've got Max, I don't want to say weaving all over the road, but made a move to the right, made a move to the left, then came back across to the right and left the gap, a car's gap between the wall and himself. Lewis went through that gap. There was no way Lewis wasn't going through that gap. He learned yesterday that he can't go around the outside because he lost so much ground when he tried to go around the outside last time.
Yep.
So he went up the inside. Now, I've stated this before on this show, and I've also stated it in some videos that I've done, where if you put somebody up against the wall or somebody is up very tight against the apex coming into a corner, you do have to allow for them taking a compromised entry to the corner you're coming into. Not necessarily because, you know, they should be backing off, but just a self-preservation. Yeah. You should be expecting somebody to have a different line coming into that corner. As they go in, Max moves over to the left to open up the corner for himself. Lewis also moves across to give that space. And then they go in together. And this is where the controversy is. Did Lewis understeer into Max or did Max turn across Lewis? That's the argument.
Okay, so to be clear, I don't think anyone has any problem with Max moving over to the right. Once Lewis moves to the right and decides I'm going down the inside, Verstappen going all the way and leaving just about a car's width and a bit more was completely fair. We're all happy
perfectly,
with that.
Perfectly legit. Yeah. No problem with that.
That's fine. But then Max Verstappen's subsequent line into Copse relies on Hamilton being able to make the apex, which probably isn't possible because Hamilton has been squeezed so tight that making the apex is impossible. So Hamilton is either always going to miss the apex or he's going to have to lift to pull out of that incident. But I feel like we've got to put cops into a bit of context for people who might not be too familiar with it, Alex. Certainly, like, we've done a lot of sim races in there. I know it's not the same as being a racing car driver, but I think most people will agree that cops is a corner best done by yourself, with perhaps a little lift in most racing, in most forms of racing, getting nicely onto the curb. And then it's all about how brave are you getting back onto the throttle so you don't run off wide. But in all side-to-side maneuvers in cops that I've ever seen, the inside car generally always wins out in those.
Yeah, going around the outside of there is hard because as you come around the outside, it does narrow, but you've got plenty of runoff. So you often see people really going at it side to side because the space is there to allow it. So that's entirely possible. So in my mind, Lewis was allowed the room. Max initially gave him the room. But what I've noticed from the onboards watching the SkyPad with Karun afterwards, I think Max turns quite early for when you have somebody alongside you. He's turned at the perfect point if there's no one alongside you. But I think Max has turned pretty early. He's seen Lewis. He's turned left to go away. But the key point for me is he has then turned hard right.
Yeah.
And that's when the contact is made. Yeah. Yes, Lewis doesn't go to the apex, but he's not obligated to.
Yeah, a lot is made of Verstappen's little sort of adjustment to the left. And my take on that, Alex, tell me if I'm wrong, is that initially he thinks, well, I've got this, Lewis is going to back out, I'm going to go to the apex. Realises Lewis is coming through and goes, oh, okay, I can no longer go to the apex, so I will now go to a line that leaves a car's width to the apex. But that brings us on to like a pretty important point, which is the inside car obligated to hit the apex? And the Austria Nico Rosberg Lewis Hamilton incident, Matt, taught me, and I changed my mind at that point, that the inside car isn't obligated to necessarily hug the inside line. The outside car more or less has to wait until there is space to start turning in. If there's a car there, the car is there. Unless there's some dramatic locking up of brakes or understeer, the inside car is kind of dictating when it's okay to turn in. It's not necessarily, oh, it must be the apex.
Well, I mean, if you or the inside car and drove straight and Verstappen had turned in and you hit him amidships, as it were, you know, well, then that might be on you. I think the inside car is obligated to not drive into the outside car, but the outside car is also obligated to not drive into the inside car. And what interests me about this is that even though they were alongside, as they were going into the turn, Verstappen was ahead. He chose his line and he turned in, and I see two places of misjudgment for him. One, he might have thought he had enough of an overspeed on Hamilton that he was clear of the danger. Or two, he thought Hamilton would adjust his line when he saw where Max was headed, which is a bit of a bet. But what I really love is I saw Albon breaking it down and saying, well, look, and I think this is where it all comes from. When you're passing somebody like that, and you're in this battle, if you leave them absolutely enough space, you've essentially just said, here, take the position. And that's why we're arguing about it right now.
DJ.
Yeah, and to that exact point of expecting Hamilton to back out of it, the reason why I'm put the blame a little bit more here on Hamilton through all of this discussion is because of the move he did on Leclerc later in the race. That was the same line they had coming into the corner, and he backed off of it to allow Leclerc to run wide. That was the same kind of thing that he could have done if he didn't want to force it with Max. And that, to me, shows that the way that that happened, the way that that went down, Hammy knew he wasn't going to make the corner.
Hammy.
And he did it again. And he did it again. And recognized it with Leclerc and backed off.
I want to pick up one point you've made there, because it's a term that's often used. You've said that Hamilton wasn't going to make the corner. I think you mean wasn't going to make the corner to the apex. So for me, making the corner in a side-to-side, wheel-to-wheel maneuver means you're going to, if you're the inside car, you are going to drive all the way to the exit, still allowing your competitive racing room on the outside. To me, that means make a corner. When we talk about someone locking up and understeering, and had the car not been there, they would have like hurtled off into the distance, like I believe in the Rosberg Hamilton incident, if anyone wants to re-argue that from 8 years ago, whenever it was. Here, Hamilton was, he was clearly always going to make the corner. Had Verstappen disappeared, he would happily have been able to drive on towards Maggot. That's a fair distinction. Van Gene?
You're right. He has the obligation to take the corner when he wants to take it because he's on the inside. People talking about Max being ahead, first of all, it doesn't matter. If you can't overtake the driver who is ahead and on the racing line, how are you supposed to overtake?
Yeah.
Because that's the whole premise of overtaking, is to get up the inside, whether you're behind or not, because you're going to be behind at some point. But the distinction I have made with regards to Lewis being alongside versus Max being ahead is Lewis was ahead as they started braking. Lewis braked first because he had to, because he's on the inside line. And the reason that Max has got the overspeed is because he's braked less and then just turns the apex. I 100% believe this crash happened because Max thought Lewis backed out.
Yep, and that may well be the case. But when Toto Wolff came out and started talking about there's a regulation that if your front axle is alongside the rear pod of the thing, it's your corner. I've never heard of that. And I don't like that terminology anyway, if that is the rule. I don't believe that was, quote unquote, Lewis's corner. I don't believe he had a right to have Max disappear. I mean, that's true. Like Max's defense and his attempt to stay around the outside and hold it was also valid. There was nothing wrong with what he did.
Correct. And had Lewis gone all the way to the edge of the track and either run into him or forced him into the runoff area, then that would have been, as we learned in Austria,
fairly typical
last week, that would have been, that is now a penalty. What's interesting to me is Albert Fabrega on Twitter said that
Who's that?
Albert Fabrega, what's the Spanish broadcast company?
All right, okay.
He works for them. He's like their Summers.
Yeah. Oh, I see. He's their Matthew Summerfield. Okay.
Yeah, basically. In the email Toto sent to Mazzi, he attached the diagram about collisions from the stewards' guidance used to judge overtaking incidents. So it's implying to me that somewhere out there is a document that the stewards get that contains guidance about how they decide these incidents. And I, for one, would love it if any of our listeners should happen to get their hands on a copy, if they would pass it along to us, because I've never heard of it before today, but I really, really, really want to see it.
My understanding has always been that in the sporting regulations, it states that if a car has a significant part of its car alongside another car, they are entitled to racing room, and they consider a major part, a part of the car as a front wing. Even a front wing end plate, they consider as a considerable part of the car. So I don't like the terminology of Lewis's corner, because...
Yeah, no, I don't.
Because that doesn't really exist.
I agree.
Especially because, as we've seen on many, many, many occasions at Silverstone, you can go two cars wide through cops. Yeah. Max chose not to give the room. Lewis chose to make the entry difficult for Max, and they came together. I mean, to be fair, it's a crash that we've been waiting for. It was going to come, and now we're going to have massive fallout because their relationship was really good and respectful up until now.
It's not going to be now.
That's considering Max's tweet or Instagram that he put out, which is a very Mardy Max. I don't really blame him for being Mardy, which basically calls Lewis unsportsmanlike for celebrating a win.
Okay, well, the lad's in hospital. Tensions are running high. I don't expect anyone to not be celebrating a win at their Grand Prix. Maybe you mute it a little so there was no crowd surfing. That's up for discussion as well. I think we can agree, Matt, though, that as exciting as that was, that's not how we want the battle between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen decided. And I think this could be a critical point. This could lead to a new forced respectful racing, because now they both know they're not going to give up. We've seen it time and time again with Hamilton and Verstappen pushing people out wide, being dominating, pushing all their chips in and assuming the other person is going to duck out. Well, do you know what? They know now. They're each calling each other's bluff. And how many races left in the season, Matt? 10 or so? 10, 12?
Easily.
We've got so much of this left. It's so good.
Yeah, and I just want to jump ahead a little bit and say that for all we've been putting it on Max, like, it was a very he was much more at risk being where he was from contact with Hamilton. But Hamilton is equally lucky that there was a red flag, because he had a cracked wheel rim and might have wound up going out of the race himself had they not been able to come into the pit lane and fix it.
I also just want to point out the amazing ability of the Mercedes mechanics during that red flag. I don't know if anybody else caught this, but they were literally duct taping pieces of carbon fiber back onto the front wing.
Yeah.
And it was just one of my favorite visuals I've seen in the F1 season thus far.
Don't worry. It's the equivalent of, you know, that'll buff out. That'll duct tape out. We'll be okay. Trumpets.
That said, still, again, when I watch this incident, I know people will disagree with me. This was my opinion. It did not look to me like in the old days when Massa and Hamilton would come together at every apex. It did not look like that kind of a move to me. The contact really was glancing and incidental, and it's only because it was at such a high speed that we had such a serious result. I don't think Hamilton intentionally put Max under the wall.
No.
And I really don't think that Max intentionally turned in with the aim of taking Hamilton's wing off either.
I just think they both thought they had it. And this is the closest I've ever been to saying it's a racing incident. I don't know. Why disappoint people who call me Hamfosi? Why don't I just say, oh, it was all Max's fault and it was terrible. But it has brought up some interesting reactions about racing rules. And I will just play, actually, a voice note from Brad. And Alex, have you been in the same situation as me? Has Brad Philpott been texting you constantly since about 5 p.m.?
Yes. I literally have I have an analogy from him which he wants me to give out.
Oh, okay. In that case, look, this was inspired by the Christian Horner reaction. Now, Christian Horner and Helmut Marko have been super, super aggressive. I feel like they might have overplayed his hand. Let's not forget here, Lewis Hamilton was adjudged to have caused an incident by the stewards. So there's no getting away from that. But he did get let off with the second lightest penalty. I can't help but feel that penalty decision was influenced by the fact that his competitor was now in the wall and out of the race. Had it been the other way round, I can't get this thought out of my head. Well, okay, Hamilton's now in the wall. He's hit the inside line. He's been forced into the wall. He's out. Now Verstappen gets the 10-second penalty. I wish we could do the replay of the incident, show the contact, pause time, then ask the stewards whose fault it was without them knowing who came off worse, and see if that made it any different. But the Red Bull camp were incandescent with rage. Christian Horner, who is normally very measured, to be fair, Matt, he was absolutely adamant that no, Lewis Hamilton had made a reckless move. No car in history has ever overtaken into cops, apparently. Lewis Hamilton should know better. He will be suffering the consequences in his own mind. And Helmut Marko was essentially calling for Lewis Hamilton's head.
Yeah, well, this is where it all started to get really sour for me. Because I felt like Horner could have had a legitimate argument, and indeed the stewards agreed with him. They placed the majority of the blame on Hamilton for not avoiding that collision. They said he had room to the inside. In fact, I could read exactly
what the stewards... No, well, okay, fine. Go on then. Let's do it.
Stewards reviewed video. Cars 33 and 44 entered turn 9 with car 33 in the lead and car 44 slightly behind. Car 44 was on a line that did not reach the apex of the corner with room available to the inside, which I think is the important bit there. When car 33 turned in, car 44 did not avoid contact, and the left front of car 44 contacted the right rear of car 33, which, yes, we could figure that out on our own. Thank you.
Okay.
Car 44 is judged predominantly at fault.
Predominantly, that's a good word. Let's hear what Brad had to say, because I'm leaving you all on video, so all look interested, guys.
So I'm sure you will have covered the Hamilton-Verstappen incident in great detail. So there's just one specific thing I wanted to address on this subject, and that was the claim that Hamilton stuck a wheel up the inside, made by Christian Horner after the race. And my view on this is that you need to really be careful about saying that phrase, sticking a wheel up the inside. That should be reserved for when you make a late move and you suddenly arrive on the scene as your opponent turns in, which clearly wasn't the case here. When there's a car that's there during the entire process of the move, and they still happen to have a bit of the car there when contact is made, that's a very different situation. That's kind of indicative of the inside driver attempting to get out of it, or the driver on the outside just being on a line which allows...
Oh, I've lost that. I do beg your pardon. Let's try if I can pick it up.
Just being on a line which allows them a faster apex speed and therefore pulls slightly further ahead at the point of contact. So it's nothing like sticking a wheel in by braking too late or diving down the inside. It's a very different situation.
Yeah, my apologies there. I was trying to use WhatsApp on the PC and it didn't quite work out. But Brad's trying to make the distinction, Alex, of someone who is just like three car lengths back and just goes, do you know what? I'm just going to send it. Like, that wasn't a send it thing, was it, at all? That's a very different manoeuvre.
No, that was, you know, they've been side by side since lights out. You know, there was, people kept saying, I kept seeing lots of conversations, people saying, oh, Max couldn't see him, wouldn't have been looking behind him in his mirrors. I'm sorry. If you think Max didn't know that Lewis Hamilton was there, Max Verstappen isn't the amazing racing driver that I think he is. If I'm in a go-kart and I know that there are people around me without looking at them, I'm pretty certain one of the greatest drivers to ever have lived knows when another driver is alongside him.
Karting's exactly the same as F1. DJ.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think Sky actually played a video of on the turn in on the old pit straight that Max looked into his right view mirror. He knew exactly where Hamilton was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that's the opinion that Alex is coming up with as well. I'm still convinced, Matt, that both of them, the things are happening so fast, they've both just made the decision that they had it. And that's where I'm kind of finishing at.
So it sounds like you're calling this a racing incident.
Oh, it's so painful. You know I don't want to do that. You know how much this hurts me. It might be my first ever racing incident, but I just think that Lewis Hamilton had been predetermined after various losses in wheel-to-wheel combat, which he is not overly accustomed to in his F1 career. He was determined to do it. Max Verstappen has effectively one mode in wheel-to-wheel combat, and I don't blame him at all, because it's been blinking brilliant for years and years. He's been able to assert his dominance in those situations, and he's been able to do it over an seven-time world champion. Sorry, bit of a spoiler for December. He's been able to do it over a seven-time world champion, and why wouldn't you think you can keep doing it? So he keeps rolling the dice and it's been working and working. But okay, you gain 7 points in Imola, you gain 7 points for a move in Bahrain or whatever. And this time he lost 25 points or whatever it is, 26 points. So that's the risk reward trade-off that you do in those situations.
Yeah. And again, these things tend to be a bit self-policing, which, you know, Max lost 25 yes. points. Had they not called a red flag, Hamilton likely would have either been out of the race or a whole extra pit stop down, reducing the amount of points he gained. So I don't know. I mean, for me, if we're talking non-legal, I'm going to put it on Max. I call it an error in judgment, either in the moment, how he chose to turn in, or larger picture, how much again is my championship lead and how much do I lose if I finish second? But if we're talking from a legal point of view, the stewards put it on Hamilton because, looking at the positioning of the cars as they entered the corner, they felt he could have done a little bit more to keep that from happening.
And I'll just repeat one more time. I do think a little bit of that was about the consequence. Had they both been binned off, I very much doubt any penalty would have carried over. We spent a lot of time on that incident, and that is understandable. That was the big event of the race. But believe it or not, the race continued after lap one. And this is the bit where we ask Matt where the race was won and lost. Yeah, man. The race was won and lost after lap two, Matt. What happened?
No.
What happened? No? What
I'm going happened? Back to lap one.
Are we going back one to lap one happened. Again? We just finished that.
I know we've discussed to death the Verstappen-Hamilton incident, but one more thing happened on lap one that I feel like I need to get in, which is that as Verstappen was into the wall, as Hamilton was regaining control of his car from the contact, Charles Leclerc zipped by him before the safety car came out. And that was going to matter a lot when they went round to do the standing restart, like, what was it, half an hour later? I forget, it was a while. But that left Leclerc in what is now, what was then, sorry, I'm getting my tenses confused, what was then pole position for the restart of the race, now minus Max Verstappen. And as we all know, at that restart, Hamilton gave it a bit of a go, but the Ferrari, yes, I'm going to say that, the Ferrari just simply took the lead and off it drove.
Now, would any of you be a little bit surprised if I was to say to you, actually, I was just gunning for Charles Leclerc. And I found myself in a little bit of a weird position, Alex, because throughout the race, Charles Leclerc had just, he'd been so cool. He's been so calm, calculated. You could see the maths working in their head. They might well have had a nosebleed, suddenly thinking, not only can we win, we can win at Silverstone. We can win in their backyard. But my goodness, we just have to acknowledge the attempt, because Charles Leclerc was not only having pace, he had extra capacity, he knew where the tyres were, he knew what Hamilton was doing, their team worked brilliantly, they got their bad pit stop out of the way on Carlos Sainz tactically so that they could do a good one for Charles Leclerc. Ferrari and Leclerc were awesome this weekend, and it is not just because they have fantastic hospitality in the Paddock Club. And a big shout out to Ferrari's official beer sponsor as well, Estrella Galicia, for hosting us all of Friday and giving us limitless champagne.
It must have been wonderful for you, Spanners, as a lifelong Ferrari fan, to get to spend time at Ferrari and then see Ferrari do really well in the Grand Prix.
I've always said that Ferrari don't resemble any kind of star, death or otherwise.
It's really weird for me because, listen, I've never been the biggest Ferrari fan, but I like both their drivers. And Leclerc did a fantastic job. I mean, I fully expected. I was like, oh, okay, Leclerc's ahead. Lewis will close the gap, drive past him and disappear off into the distance, and the 10 seconds won't make a difference. And that didn't happen. Lewis couldn't get within a second and a half until Leclerc had an issue. And it's when Leclerc had his issue that I was most impressed.
Yeah.
Because they were telling him all sorts of different things to change and modes and dials and buttons to press while still putting in his best laps of the race somehow. It was an absolute masterclass. Yeah. And again, another one of these drivers that's there with George Russell, that's there with Lando Norris, and just behind Max and Lewis, who are the drivers of the future for Formula One. And just a fantastic performance from Ferrari and Leclerc today.
So the thing is, Matt, this is the most impressive thing, is how on earth did Charles Leclerc, in a Ferrari that isn't as fast as the Mercedes, that isn't as fast as the Red Bull, that is likely on par with a McLaren, how on earth in a track like Silverstone that is a festival of speed, in an engine that has been struggling for years with an engine, how on earth did he evade the hunt for Red 16 for so long in that first stint? Because he won that first stint. We see Lewis Hamilton hunting down Bottas, Verstappen, various people on the first stint. Your tyres won't last as long as my tyres. We're quicker. I can sit there and wait all day long. But Hamilton literally didn't have an answer for, now let's get this very clear, Charles Leclerc in a 2021 Ferrari. How?
Okay. In my file of things you're about to be sorry you asked me, I will now put this question.
Hang on. Summers has just written tyres in our Patreon Slack group. Okay. So I'm guessing 100%. It was to do with tyres.
First of all, according to Sky, at least, or maybe it was Five Live, I listened to them both, so sometimes I forget who said what. It was used mediums from Mercedes at the start of the race, not new mediums. So thing number one was there. Thing number two, track temperatures. It was very, very hot, and the cars are much, much heavier than they were in the sprint race. They're full of 95 kilograms worth of fuel. Mercedes was not at its best when it was full of fuel, and the Ferrari was just that little bit more balanced, and you could see it by how easily Leclerc was able to extend his lap times, even after Hamilton, having had a sniff of those engine issues, had gotten himself into DRS to really try and have a go at taking the lead. And I do want to point out those engine issues, because the margin at the end of the race for Hamilton was around 3 seconds. And I would argue that Leclerc easily lost about that much time just sorting through that with his Ferrari engineers. So in some ways, this race was perhaps even a bit closer than it looked. And boy, did it really look close.
Yeah, well, also, well, if you want to do that, I would argue that had Verstappen not crashed into the barrier, had he gathered it onto Copse and just ended up, say, 40 seconds behind, I don't think Lewis Hamilton would have got the 10-second penalty. So we can't deny that the 10-second penalty also made this race super exciting and added in like a special factor, because Lewis couldn't do his normal thing of just, well, I'll put pressure on you and we'll wait for the pit stops and I can... It took the undercut away for a start, didn't it? There was no option of that.
Yeah, it did. And in that sense, I sort of already filed it with our whose fault is this discussion. And having done that, I neglected to mention it. But yes, obviously the 10-second penalty played a critical role in it, giving Leclerc a little bit of a breather, but not quite enough of one given his engine issues. The other thing I want to mention from the restart that really mattered a lot was Norris and getting ahead of Valtteri Bottas at the start. Now, we know afterwards Bottas said he had wheel spin on both of his starts and that negatively affected him, but it wound up consigning him to third place at best.
DJ, am I getting carried away with Leclerc's race? Because I just, you know, he controlled it in a way. You know, he was able to respond. He was able to be cool and calm. I don't think you can do that in a Ferrari unless you're a bit special. Not in a Ferrari in general. I know they're generally a great team and they're fantastic and wonderful. But in this year's Ferrari, I just think, am I getting carried away? We've just seen an extraordinary talent today.
No, and we've seen it throughout the course of the season. I mean, look at the two poles he's racked up in a car that shouldn't be on pole. Yeah, they were street circuits, and that's going to be a little bit different. But I mean, from the minute he entered the sport driving for Sauber, everybody said this guy is special, and he continues to prove it time and time again. He was doing the things that make you most impressive. Like Matt said, having to manage those issues, getting there, being able to go fast and playing with the buttons to try to get it. It shows how much of a complete driver he is, that he's able to keep up the speed and be thinking about the technical issues at the same time.
Okay. I'm not slagging off Crofty. I'm actually a big fan of David Cross on the Sky commentary, but he was amazed and perplexed that there was someone at Ferrari that knew which buttons you have to press. You know, they literally write a manual every time they do a build. The people who do a build and make the software have to write like a flow chart. So thing A isn't happening, press menu plus B. So it isn't necessarily Derek who gave the order. It could have been Derek who wrote the technical manual. He goes around asking all the engineers when they're building those software programs and the engines. They go, but what if that doesn't happen? And they go, well, if that doesn't happen, you just press enter C, B, or whatever. But to do that cool and calm under pressure while Lewis Hamilton is chasing you down, I almost found myself disappointed when I was doing the maths after the second stop, because as soon as Lewis Hamilton came out on the hard tyre, suddenly then the delta, even though it was big, even though Leclerc had a big lead, you could see Hamilton had a second lap, a second lap, a second lap. And you go, is this going to stop? Is this going to wear off? But it wasn't. It was relentless. It was a second lap, second lap. And if anything, it was Leclerc responding and doing well to respond on his tyres and his engineers going, okay, just give it everything flat out. And they did. So again, we see two of the greatest talents in Formula One pushing really hard, almost like a sprint race at the end there, wasn't it, Matt?
It was. And in fact, Ferrari turned his engine back up.
What?
To give him every single chance in the final laps. And you could see it because the delta between the two cars dropped to below a second for a bit as he used up the last of his tires. But the Mercedes was better on that hard tire. It was faster. The car was lighter. The balance was better. And once his teammate was given the order to get out of the way.
Yes. Okay. This is what I want to talk to Vangene about. I've been waiting to talk to you about this the whole time. I mean, the pretense that Bottas is on any kind of level playing field, gone. Fully gone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
To be fair, though, it's not even a case of that. It's just a case. It's a case of simple mathematics, really. Bottas is Bottas fourth in the championship at the moment? You know,
maybe.
He's nowhere near the title fight. There's no batting around it. The title fight is between Max and Lewis, and that's it. So, I said it as soon as a new Lewis is going to take his penalty. It would be madness for Mercedes not to say, Bottas, get out of the way. Because you want Lewis to gain as many points as possible.
Well, yeah, but Alex, that's pretty bad. I mean, Bottas didn't have any problems. He didn't bump into anyone. He didn't drop it. He didn't spin. Yet he's found himself in a position where he couldn't get towards Leclerc in the Ferrari. Bottas is in the same Mercedes.
And he lost about 6 seconds to Lewis once Lewis passed him as well.
Yeah.
So there was no contest. All it was about was not slowing Lewis down.
And this, Matt, is one of the things that drives me bonkers about our discourse in motorsport. There is a big gap in the drivers. Bottas is undeniably a fantastic driver, but there is a big skill gap that you wouldn't expect in other sports. So we are in a position where there is a world where Mercedes have Bottas as their number one driver and another driver supporting him. And actually, they look like a team that can't catch Ferrari today. And there's also an alternate universe where Ferrari didn't hire Leclerc, where they stuck with Vettel or Massa or Raikkonen. And that Mercedes, that Ferrari doesn't look like it did today. That's a hard thing for F1 fans to digest.
Well, before I move on to my actual point, I will say that we're looking at him compared to the very, very best driver.
Yes.
Or one of the two best drivers in the entire world. So, you know, these things can be a bit relative. Bottas is a very, very good driver. That said, it brings me to the last point I want to make about where the race was won and lost. And
good.
That was Norris's long pit stop.
Oh, yes. Oh.
And that was an extra 4 seconds. And the reason that mattered is because he came out and immediately the following lap, Mercedes brought Valtteri in to claim that position. That was a podium position, third spot. But because it was early relative to Hamilton and to Leclerc, you're talking about Bottas on tires that are 7 laps older. And I'm going to sit right here and tell you that in that heat, given the extra laps he had to drive that car, I'm not going to put it on him being unable to manage tires. I'm going to put it on the tires unable to manage that distance at that speed relative to the two people who stopped later. And that's why it locked him into third place and didn't really give him a chance at second.
Okay, how are we all doing on the panel? Those watching on video will know that I today have also donned the grey version of the Mist Apex polo. So me and Matt can have a competition about who is the sweatiest. You are currently winning at the moment. Matt, let's tell people where they can follow you online. You are at MattPT55 on Twitter. That's where you like to hang out the most.
That is absolutely correct. I do check my messages there relatively frequently, and occasionally I say the odd thing that might be either entertaining or enraging, depending upon your viewpoint.
Now, you're very political, which is different to me, because I have no strong political opinions one way or the other.
Yes, well, fortunately, I basically have no job at all because I'm a musician, so yeah. I can pretty much say whatever I want without fear of reprisal.
Musicians are the worst.
Yeah, we are.
Good. At MattPT55, all the links in the show notes below. Go follow Matt's wife as well at A Weaver Wright, the most talented romance novel writer of all time. I can make
that
claim.
Yeah, there we go. That'll work.
I can make that claim. We've also got Alex Jeansy Van Gene. You do streams. At Alex Van Gene, he spells his name weird. V-A-N-G-E-E-N. I mean, that's how you find you, Alex. Have you never been tempted to just completely make up a random other name?
I don't need to, because mine's unique anyway, because there isn't another one of me, which is great. So yeah, so I do streams on a Thursday night. I'm starting to make some videos now about racecraft masterclasses. I've got a couple of those in the pipeline. I've got a review video coming out soon as well. And you can also follow me on Twitter as well, YouTube. And I've also got Discord, and the link for that will be downstairs, will be down in the comments.
No, we're not gonna share your Discord, because we have a competing Discord. DJ, a new friend from, I can't remember, California or Canada or something.
California.
You have social media. People can follow you by searching for
at the DJ Clark is my Twitter. The Scottish way of spelling it.
Okay. Do you have some roots in Scotland? Is that why?
I do. Third or fourth generation from Aberdeenshire. So.
Aberdeenshire. Yes, that's definitely how it's said.
I know the accent. I know.
Let's move on to the midfield. Well, I say move on to the midfield. I must be completely honest, Matt. I had to put in our Slack group. I was obviously watching the race. I heard things. I heard Kimi did this. I'm hearing Norris. I'm hearing Alonso doing stuff. But the focus was so on the front. I think we always have to watch the race again and get like a director's cut where you ignore the front few.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the question I'm going to ask you is, where does the midfield start?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Is it directly after the podiums? If that's the case, we're going to be talking about Norris, who we've already talked about. But the big loser, as you pointed out earlier, was Carlos Sainz, who had a 9,000-second pit stop. After Ricardo came in, he actually extended. He had about a 2-second advantage. Would have come out ahead of Ricardo and behind Norris. And in fact, because of that long stop, he wound up behind Ricardo. And I think as we saw yesterday in the sprint race with Alonso, even Alonso in a slow car on soft tires that are melting was very, very difficult to pass people here at Silverstone this year. And it's my opinion that I don't think they got the DRS zones entirely correct, because it seemed to very much favor your defender this time around.
Well, what would you have done different?
More better DRS, of course.
Okay, so extra DRS.
Yeah, but the DRS wasn't quite powerful enough. You had to have a very big advantage over your rival to be able to get round them. And that's why Alonso did well. And that's why, in fact, all the soft tire people in the sprint race, save Bottas, made a lot of positions up, because they could do it at the start while everybody else's tires were cold.
It was an intriguing fight between Sainz and Ricardo. And in fact, like on the final lap, when Hamilton was just kind of wrapping it up, there was people screaming, going, show us Sainz, show us Ricardo.
Yeah, because they were in DRS for, I would say lap 42, 43. I noticed that they were in DRS. And the other big one really was Stroll on Alonso, and then whoever's behind him, maybe Perez, was behind him till they pitted him again to go for fast lap and, ruin Kimi Raikkonen's day. And it was just like nothing. You'd see, 8 tenths, 6 tenths, 5 tenths, 4 tenths, 3 tenths, 8 tenths. It just wasn't quite enough for any of the midfield to get by each other, because the margins there are so much tighter than they are between the top two teams and everybody else.
Yes, and it is. And it's really a hard question to say, right, where do we define the midfield? And I suppose, DJ, we have to look at Perez and say, well, Perez put himself in the midfield today. And I entitled a segment, Perez's Terrible, Horrible Weekend, because it was just a nightmare from start to finish.
It really was. And I think it harkens back to a little bit of my original frustration with the idea of the sprint race. in that you're competing for 3 points when really and truly you should be going for all 25. Not to say that it wasn't Perez's fault and he had to fight his way back up through the field. And I think he did a relatively admirable job from where he was coming
really? From. Because I don't, right? I'm a Perez fan and I was looking for him to like absolutely punch it through that field. You've got an amazing Red Bull car that's been fantastic all season. And frankly, he was just getting stuck in too many places. There was an excuse of like, Alex, there was an excuse of the DRS trains. But like you're in a Red Bull, you should be absolutely cruising past the likes of Kimi Raikkonen and Pierre Gasly. And in the end, frankly, he ended up just pushing Raikkonen into the middle of left field because he just had enough. He came through Brooklands and just went, no, I can't be held up by you anymore.
Luckily, we have the example of his teammate. If Max was in Perez's position, would Max have been out of the points? No chance. Max would have scythed his way through that field in that car with the opportunity to take off downforce to make it faster around down the straights. Perez was a damp squib today. Really disappointing. I expected fireworks and we got nothing.
So I guess, Matt, we could say, well, we don't actually know what the changes did. There was no opportunity to test them. They rolled the dice, set a pit lane start and we'll rip some wing off. Who knows if that was the right way to go?
Yeah, but it's also worth pointing out that Max is getting all the brand new bright shiny parts on his car and Perez is definitely not getting those.
Sure.
So it's worth considering they're not playing necessarily with exactly the same toy when we have these discussions. That said, awful lot of people were dropping it. We haven't mentioned Vettel, who did a rather delightfully embarrassing thing that I've done before in iRacing, which is spin and wind up in the entry to the old pit lane.
So this is interesting. Making this part of iRacing, right? So I've put my boy in the sim, Alex, and I've said to him over and over again, you know, when you come out of a corner, you have to earn the accelerator with your so you're turning. You can't just floor the accelerator because the back end will go around. And we've gone through this in karting. We've gone through it in sim racing. You must unsteer. So I say to the kids in their ear as they're going in, steer, unsteer as they go out. And because Vettel was holding the line, I was in slow motion on the replay watching it with my boy. And I'm saying, what did he do wrong? You know, he's back on the power, desperate to get out of Luffield with about 3/4 of the way to a quarter lock. And that's what he's done. He's just dropped it, you know, with too much steering lock.
We get told off to talk about iRacing, but
no, I know.
I'm pretty certain we have all done that on cold tires on the F3 on your outlap.
Yeah.
90% or 90% certain every single one of us have done that. And it's really, really easy to do. But he's a 4-time Formula One world champion who's got many wins under his belt.
He does it a lot.
Two race wins in Silverstone under his belt. And I just, you know, if Yuki had done that, or Latifi had done that, or Mazepin had done it, I'm surprised he didn't. I wouldn't have been surprised. But Seb?
Well, hang on. He was doing this. All his spins at Ferrari were all under acceleration. Mm. And we all said, oh, it's Ferrari. Maybe Ferrari aren't giving him a car that replicates the downforce on the rear end that the Red Bull give him. But Matt, you know, Aston Martin, if he keeps doing it in the Aston Martin, and that was very reminiscent of his Ferrari days, you have to go, actually, is this just something inherent in his driver style? He rolls the dice on corner exits, and every now and then it just lets him down.
Yeah, well, in this case, I would, looking at where he was, I would just simply argue that the grip wasn't there. Because he was inside, and it looks like the line that they mostly took were a little bit outside of where he was, because he was fighting for a decent position. He wound up being in an okay place and was in a point scoring position till he did that. And then basically his race was over. They eventually retired him after he lounged around at the back being miserable, while Stroll, who had done terribly up to that point, actually had a really good restart and found himself eventually stuck behind Alonso in P8.
Yeah. Okay. So is there any argument on Perez being at fault for the Luffield thing and just squeezing Kimi into the thing? You can't do
not
that.
For me.
Yeah. You can't just. He's running. The unique thing about the Brooklyn's Luffield thing is it's an exit and also an entry. So it's like a chicane, but it's not a chicane because they're two very distinctive corners. So he's running out wide on the exit and also closed him and pushed him into the apex of another corner. I don't think there's much defence. We don't even need to play the bumper for that. So some other action in the midfield. Go on, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, since we're talking about it, if you wonder what happened to Pierre Gasly, who formerly was more or less in that spot, and actually, compared to the rest of the weekend, having a good race, he had a late puncture. And that put him out of the points, but it let his teammate, Yuki Tsunoda, who'd been in the race without causing, you know, any major incidents, it actually let him into 10th place because Red Bull did that thing where they said, what can we do to Lewis? Oh, I know. We can take away his fast lap point. Let's pit Perez 2 laps from the end and give him some softs because, well, you know, that's all we've really got left at this point.
So it's the British Grand Prix. So we're going to go to another Brit that was on the grid. Sorry, DJ. Sorry for this Brit bias. Sorry for this Brit focus. Hope you can stand it. But I want to talk George Russell because even with his 9th place in the sprint qualifying race, the gods looked upon him and said, the boy Russell defies us. We shall summon the magic stewards and grant him a 3-place penalty. He must never, ever finish in the top 10. But there was people asking, hang on, who asked, is there something inherent about Russell's starts? Because he does always seem to go immediately backwards, that Williams doesn't start as well as it qualifies.
Well, we've talked about it a couple of times. I mean, specifically with the brake magic mode on the Mercedes, that all of the wheels and all of the different ways that those are set up are differently. So there may be a slightly different clutch adjustment that's just a little harder to get right for Russell to do. The other thing to remember with that Williams car is, correct me if I'm wrong on this, it is the only one that doesn't have that LCD screen on the wheel itself. They actually have it mounted to the chassis. And so I wonder if that configuration could be something that is causing those starts to sort of fall back a little bit for him.
Matt?
I think I saw him talking on the Pit Lane channel post-race or in the F1 TV post-race show. And he basically said, car is rubbish, it starts. So I think it's kind of a bit down to that. He had one good one, one bad one. At the end of the day, what undid him was locking up into Brooklands and sliding into Carlos Sainz. Because he got a 3-spot penalty for that. And beyond that, he did a reasonable job of maintaining his position in the pack. But the Williams isn't quite the car yet to be able to move forward in the race like it has been doing in qualifying.
All right. We can't avoid it for much longer, can we? Let's talk about the sprint race. So I think we should go to DJ Daniel, as your mother calls you, I'm sure. Daniel J. Clark. Okay. So the sprint race is all your fault as an American. It's your fault because Liberty decided, no, this is not the way it goes. But they were saying basically the younger fans need a bit more excitement over the course of the weekend. So I was there on the Friday and watched a very exciting qualifying. It was a very normal qualifying, and the current qualifying format is pretty exciting, and it crescendos towards an exciting climax, which we got, and we decided the grid, but only for the sprint race. And then they shoehorn in, and it is a shoehorn, this extra race. As a typically impatient, short attention span American, were you sated? Is this what you want? Are you happy? We've changed for you.
Not at all. And I am going to make a very, very strange analogy, and I hope you all are all going to follow
okay,
me on
we're
this.
Waiting. We're waiting. Here we go.
All right. So last year, there was an app that was launched that was called Quibi. I don't know how far it got out into the UK.
Yeah, I've heard of Quibi.
The
yes.
idea was that you could watch TV shows for 8 minutes. And what it was is the idea was, well, all of these young people, they want to have such short attention spans that's all the information that they can retain. And so we're going to make it like that. Didn't work. Because people my age, people younger, we watch silly stuff on TikTok or on YouTube or whatever, but we don't want to watch standard fair content in a compressed time. We want to have that full build out. What the sprint race qualifying is that exact same thing. It is older folks who hear the fact that, oh, everybody has a lower attention span. We should do something to change that and make things easier. When in reality, what you need to do, the problem is not in an attention span problem. It is that millennials and Gen Zers have a higher threshold for good content. How many people from the ages of 20 to 35 sat through 7 seasons of Game of Thrones? It's not an attention span problem. It's a quality problem.
I think this is the time to point out that you're like a fully like media dude in like the heart of like American movie and TV stuff. So this is right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Is the idea, do you think, from Liberty to just, well, we have 2 days of excitement. Actually, now we need 3 days of excitement. Was that one of the aims?
I think it could be. I mean, I understand the idea that they want to have, you know, that full elongated thing. And Friday is a little bit, it is a little bit boring. It is a little bit that kind of thing. But I think the way to do it, the way to spice it up, isn't to change Formula One. It's to get more hype into F2, F3, the support races. Get
yes.
those broadcasts.
Now you're right. Now you're talking. There was very little mentioned, actually, about the W Series, which had a wonderful weekend as well. And they really could have made more of that. But Matt and I, we were having the discussion. We're on different side of the fences, Matt. You're very much a fan, I think, of the sprint races. I've not been a fan at all. One of the interesting things is I don't think anyone's mind was particularly changed by the actual event. Everyone had preconceptions going in. And then when the sprint race happened, just about everyone went, see? Like everyone on both sides went, see? Told you.
It was Rorschach's sprint race.
Right.
You could literally find a reason to support whatever pre-existing point you have. I do want to say something, though, because you did, Spanners, go to Friday's race.
Mm-hmm.
And was it better for you to be able to watch actual qualifying on Friday than it would have been if it had just been two practices?
And we're assuming that I'm lying about being able to remember anything after about 3 p.m. with a stream of free champagne.
I feel you there, but yes.
Friday was incredibly exciting, yes.
Yeah.
But I feel like I got the Saturday experience on a Friday. So, you know, did we just borrow Saturday's excitement and do it on Friday?
See, now here's where I think it gets interesting. So if you just asked me, what did I think of the sprint race? Devoid of any other context, which I know is not how you like to talk about it, but devoid of any other context, I enjoyed the sprint race. I enjoyed it for the following reasons. Yeah. One, it was brand new. We'd never seen the teams have to deal with it before. And that always means something interesting might happen, even if it doesn't.
Okay, but Van Gien, oh, sorry, you had 2 points, sorry.
Two, what it pointed out to me is that Friday ticket holders on a normal race weekend are a bit of a hard sell compared to the other 2 days. So the question becomes, is the sprint race on its own was fun to watch. How do you incorporate it into the format in a way that doesn't upset the already existing apple cart? So each day gets something that's really worth being there for, that the drivers are invested in. And Leclerc, man, he loved having that on Friday, that on Saturday, that on Sunday, because he said, look, Fridays are kind of boring for us drivers. The engineers just tell us to go out and drive around in circles, and that's all we do.
There we go, Alex. It fundamentally solved the problem, which was...
Oh, bless the multimillionaire racing drivers who have to just drive around in a
Formula
1 car.
Have to work on Friday.
For 2 hours. Oh, I feel so... My heart bleeds. No, for me, the biggest problem with... it added nothing. For me as a viewer and a big fan of Formula 1... There was nothing added to me. It actually brought me added confusion because I didn't quite know what the timings were because the timings were literally all over the place all weekend. I really don't like qualifying on a Friday because my Fridays are really, really busy, and trying to fit that in at 6 o'clock when I'm putting my kids to bed doesn't work. And I can imagine for lots of people who watch Formula One, who have kids and have a partner who are not interested in Formula One to then explain to them they have three really important things to watch on a Friday, a Saturday, and a Sunday. It just isn't going to fly. But also, you know, okay, the sprint race is exciting because it's the start of a race. The start of a race is always exciting. So that's always going to be good.
Yeah.
But it changed nothing for today. Today was brilliant, regardless of the sprint race.
I just want to just address your having time. And everyone has a kind of certain amount of bandwidth where they can watch their F1 without getting yelled at. And if actually some people miss qualifying. So they just on a Saturday, they might watch the qualifying highlights or just look at what the grid is and then watch the race. Now there's massive, massive FOMO, fear of missing out, old people. That's what it means, FOMO. If you don't catch the Saturday sprint race, because, well, the thing is, Matt, if you're a Perez fan, you can't just suddenly look at that and go, wait a minute, Perez was fourth and now he's a pit lane star. So what I have to now as an F1 fan commit to watching this, or I don't understand the weekend. And I would argue that you could kind of just watch the race in isolation before.
I'm glad you came back to me, because there's a saying over here, you don't want to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. The good is, if you looked at it on your own, it was a fun thing to watch. It was short, there was action, and it was different action because the cars had so much less fuel in them. If you were a fan of Formula One, you didn't like it because the qualifying is supposed to set the grid for Sunday, not the Saturday race. And then you have the problem of, well, how do we take something which has some potential and work it into a weekend so that every day you get something to watch, but you don't mess with the format that already works? I would argue it's worth trying to figure out how to make the sprint race fit into the weekend without changing the fundamental dynamic that we already have.
DJ, I mean, no one's arguing that race cars go vroom isn't great. So a lot of the polls were, did you enjoy race cars go vroom? Oh yeah, absolutely. Race cars go vroom. They're great. But the question is this how you want the grid decided?
No, it reeks of NASCAR. It's stage racing. It's
Wait, is that an insult? Is that an insult? Reeks of NASCAR. Yeah, are we using that as a hate term? Are we?
For me a little bit. Yes, even though I have to call a NASCAR race tonight. Don't let anybody hear that.
Okay.
But that is a problem in that regard. Now, if you want to keep doing these sprint races, let's think about changing things up a little bit. Maybe we have a non-championship weekend where we go to Kyalami. We get the teams to do it. They used to do it back in the day. IndyCar used to put up a massive prize purse to go run at Fontana at the end of the season. Maybe that's a way to do it. And maybe the other way to potentially thinking about doing it is we amp up and make a bigger deal out of the race of champions that we do that. Or, hey, if we're worried about attention spans, let's cut Friday. Make it a two-day race.
Yeah, that would be a massive help, I think, to everyone, Matt.
Except for the promoters
who might
also need that income. And this is why I'm focused on, let's find a way to make this work, to make the Friday ticket as valuable as the Saturday ticket, as valuable as the Sunday ticket, in terms of what you get to see and how invested the drivers are in the outcome. Right now, Friday lacks an outcome that Saturday and Sunday have.
Alex, I felt like the sprint race was just a shadow first stint. It was these cars aren't really adapted to doing a sprint race. So it was just like the first stint of a Grand Prix, except you couldn't plan for a pit stop. I don't know. The first couple of laps were great. And had Alonso not got that great start, we wouldn't have seen really any racing. So I'm not sure what it added to the weekend.
Max summed it up for me. He wasn't elated that he'd just led for 17 races.
Laps,
and in his... Yeah. And in his post not a race interview, he said, I don't really agree because I think the grid should be decided by who sets the fastest single lap. So if the guy who won the sprint race doesn't agree with the sprint race, and the thing is, I think you'll agree, we noticed this. A lot of the in-house F1 media, the people on the ground, were lauding it up like it was the best thing ever. And Twitter saying that, all the responses have been amazing. I hardly saw any decent responses.
Can we just say the responses, right? So I don't blame F1. So Ross Brawn instantly came out and there was tweets and stuff saying, I declare this an instant success. That showed, this proves it, that it was exciting. Well, any grid start will be exciting. And all of the F1 media people that we like and follow on Twitter, they all said it's a great success. And then what happened was they saw the replies. All the replies were, well, okay, yeah, it was fine, I guess, to watch the race cars, but this is not how I want the grid to be decided. It was a bit flat. It didn't really work. So there was then a bunch of polls, and everyone put the poll out that said, did you like Vroom race cars today? And most of them put, like, yes, I loved it. Meh, it was fine. And no, I hated it. And then you would get like 20% I loved it, most of them meh, and then a percentage saying that they didn't like it. The most useful question is, would you want this to decide the Sunday grid? And I put that poll out because I felt that was more useful. And it was about 79% to 21%, 79% saying, no, let's have the old format decide it. That doesn't mean they didn't enjoy the sprint race. Any Formula One cars starting off the line, that's fun.
And that gets back to my point. The fact that I think we can all agree that it's not best when used in the way it was used this weekend is different from, should we look for a way to involve it at certain races where it might be appropriate to give more value to the promoters,
yeah,
and to the people selling TV minutes and eyeballs?
Okay, so here's my last point on it. I just want to see if anyone wants to agree or disagree with this. Is the action?
Oh, sorry, was that too soon?
There's a slight. Sometimes we have a Zoom lag and delay. It looks like we had a bit of a preemptive Zoom there for you. So my fear before the sprint races was that the sprint races would borrow a lot from Sunday. So in qualifying, you will sometimes get like a mix up of grids, because some people will set up for a fastest lap and some people will set up for a race pace, for example. So you might get a Ferrari or a McLaren just getting there above the Mercedes, and that sets you up for the race. My fear was that the sprint race would shuffle everything back broadly into order. And a few things saved the sprint race from doing that. There was a battle. There wasn't even a battle up front. Verstappen just got a better start and was ahead, so he may as well have started ahead. Alonso got a good start, so he held a few people up for a little bit, and that made for entertaining racing. Perez and Sainz were involved in incidents and went down the back. But really, I mean, Vangene, this is the thing we argue about in karting when we're deciding how to set the grids. If you put the cars in the fastest race pace order, you're putting yourself in for a less exciting race. And all the sprint race really did was make it more likely that the fastest race pace cars would end up lined up in race pace order, with the odd exception at the back of the grid.
Yeah, it unshuffled the grid. Russell went further back. There was a couple of winners and a couple of losers, but you're always going to get that. You know, Perez binned it off in the wall, and or nearly in the wall. Don't know how he missed that.
Yeah, it was quite a good save in the end.
Sainz got bumped off by Georgie Boy. And Alonso had that electric start and then fell back the order, which was part of the excitement of that sprint race. If
exactly,
Alonso had just started normally, it would have been normal. So it didn't really, that's my issue, is it just didn't do much. And I was sat watching it with a semi-casual F1 fan, and he's like, I don't get it. What's the point?
Yeah. My son wandered into the room and said, on Saturday, and I said, okay, guys, there was qualifying yesterday, but now they're going to have a small race first. And he just went, why? I don't know. So I'm still waiting for that answer. But look, it's one data point. Maybe it all becomes apparent in the next sprint race, Alex. They might now have learned things that mean that the sprint race is now a massive strategic element for whenever they do it next, and it all kind of makes sense. So I'm willing to wait for two data points.
But we're also being really arrogant in the fact that this is for us. It's not for us. They don't care about us. It's exactly what Matt brought up earlier, which is, will it bring more money in for a Friday? Because people will come and watch qualifying, and then more money in on a Saturday, add more money on a Sunday. Will it get more eyeballs? That is all they're worried about. They don't care about us, who want the purest form of the sport to be a meritocracy.
Oh, okay, hang on a minute.
The best teams create the best cars, and then they qualify on pole, and then they go on and have their race. They don't care about us.
I had this accusation lauded at me. You're just a traditionalist. It's like, no, I'm not old and a traditionalist. I'm the young, plucky up-and-comer. Matt, when did this happen? When did I become the... But look, they try to do elimination, the elimination thing where one person gets eliminated as the qualifying goes on. I love that. I thought we could give that more breathing time and more air.
I agree.
I'm not open. I'm not open to these ideas. I just don't quite get this one. That's all. Anyway.
For me, it destroys the record books.
Oh, that doesn't matter. Who cares? We changed the points. We changed the points already. Who cares?
But it does matter in the sense of, did Lewis Hamilton actually go down as getting pole position, or does Max go down as getting pole position?
I don't agree with you. Titles count.
But also, when I talk about being traditionalist, it's more a case of, it's not traditionalist, it's just a case of that sport. You know, if you went to football and then said, right, for the first 20 minutes, we're pulling all the goalies, and then for the last 20 minutes, we'll put the goalies back in. It's like, you can't just change the format just to get a bit more flashbang, because it's a bit more flashbang from a standing start.
There we go.
That's all they have done it for.
We've identified that we've reached the point where change is never good. So instead of embracing any kind of change, let's move on to the podium. A fantastically enjoyable Silverstone Grand Prix. Actually, not for the out-and-out racing on this occasion. And the fact that it has been hot and sweltering hot all weekend may have jaded my view of the weekend and the racing. But I think that this is a race that was not a classic on track. That doesn't make sense. The race itself wasn't a classic, but the drama around it somehow conspired to be a classic. Lots of talking points. The sprint race will get another outing and we can judge then whether or not it was a success. I don't think anyone's mind has been changed by this weekend. And then we have seen a culmination of this long-standing battle with Max Verstappen. Max and Lewis Hamilton have been the Ross and Rachel of F1. This has been the will they, won't they? And finally they did. They got together. So this is like the big drama moment. We can all celebrate in that. And let's see where it goes next. There's going to be a baby. One of them is going to want to move to France. And we'll just see how that all works out. But this is the point of the show, that we have to give out some awards. So the first award we do is the thing of the weekend. Oh, my goodness. Let's be super duper positive before we judge people from the comfort of our own sheds and sofas. This is the bit where we say, what was our thing of the weekend? It can be a driver, a person. It can be an ethereal concept like love or commitment. Who should we pick on first? Let's go to America. Let's go to DJ. DJ, what was your thing of the weekend?
I said it before, I'm going to say it again. It was the Mercedes Canix with a little bottle of super glue and duct tape fixing that front wing. That just made me so happy to see.
So the F1 engineers in the engineering world in the UK, which I have been a part of for a lot of my professional life, like the F1 engineers are seen as a pinnacle of that, and it's very interchangeable between that and defense engineers, aeronautical engineers and stuff. And there is a common thing with engineers that if it doesn't move and it's supposed to, WD-40, if it moves and it's not meant to, duct tape. And just to see that these guys at the very pinnacle are like, that's moving and it's not supposed to, some kind of shiny tape, let's just hack that together. Good, so that's your thing of the weekend. Matt, two rumpets, who are you giving your thing of the weekend? And it can't be the fact that I'm now beating you in the sweating through our grey Mist Apex polos.
It could just maybe be the fact that we are even having this contest to begin with. You never know.
I'm so hot. I need the aircon on. Can the end of the show just have a massive blast of my fan and aircon, please?
You just have to ask the audio quality experts on the other end of our show.
Nope, that'll be a no. So you just have to put up with my red, sweaty face. But who's your thing of the weekend, Matt?
Or what? You know what my thing of the weekend is?
I don't. You haven't told me yet. I'm asking you.
Okay, well, then I will tell you. My thing of the weekend is the people who looked at the DRS zones, looked at Silverstone and said, you know what would be a great idea? Let's start the sprint race on the soft tire. Because they gained, minus Bottas, Alonso and Raikkonen, four spots. Ocon gained three. Okay. And that set them up to have a really good race. Alpine, both drivers in the points. And Raikkonen, had he managed to keep the car pointed the correct direction for most of the race, was actually right on Ocon's tail until he dropped it the first time before Perez made him drop it the second time. Or I forget. I don't know. It's raking, and so it just is what it is.
I suspect Matt made a joke about tires. I'm going to throw my head back and pretend that I understood it. Nice one, Matt. Van Geen, who was your thing of the weekend or what?
The absolutely incredible capacity crowd.
Cheering
the drivers around. I mean, again, I've said this before, I'm a WWE fan, and watching the pop when superstars come out to their music, it was exactly what it was like when you had George on his qualifying lap and Lewis and Max going at it. And it was just, you don't hear that crowd anywhere else. Whether they put more microphones in the stand or the Brits are just loud. But yeah, just having that crowd was just amazing. And I'm so happy because it really does. You think it doesn't add anything when you look at Formula One. But it really, really does. And it was amazing.
It's like WWE, but not pretend. Have I just ruined Christmas for you?
Oh, my gosh. You did not say that out loud, did you? Oh, no.
Oh, sorry.
It's scripted. They still do flips and stuff.
Yeah, man. Yeah, sports entertainment. And in a lot of ways, Matt, F1 is sports entertainment as well, because we're allowed to make changes that just entertain people. That crowd was entertained, and I was there on Friday. The atmosphere was absolutely fantastic. It was absolutely electric. I don't think we quite outdid the Dutch fans, if I'm honest. The Dutch fans were something else at Austria. And I think
they had more smoke.
Well, they've got more smoke. They're like fully like just on it and dancing. But in the British fans' defense, like we were weighed down by handkerchiefs in like little knots just to keep the sun off our head. Like it was so boiling hot. All right. Oh, my thing of the weekend. I need to do a thing of the weekend as well. Ooh, Alonso. Fernando Alonso. Matt, I know you're an Ocon fan, but wasn't Alonso so punchy? Wasn't it just so wonderful just to see him making an entire mess of that midfield? He was in places he shouldn't have been all weekend, sprint format or not. He was fifth, sixth, seventh, all the way through the weekend. It was marvelous.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about race pace, Alpine did not have the race pace to be where they finished today, and yet there they finished. So,
yeah.
But the start, particularly the sprint race start, was just, it was a beautiful thing to watch, not because it was him dodging last minute accidents and knifing his way through, but because you know from the moment he started on those tires, he was like, if I follow this course, I'm going to wind up so far ahead of everybody else. And then he just did the thing.
Yeah, he was amazing. Right, now's the time where we criticize people at the top of their... Like, I feel bad about this section, but here it is. You know, it's got antiquity.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
We've been doing it for 7 years, Matt, and we're not going to stop now. You are in the comfort of your Manhattan penthouse. For you, from the comfort of that apartment, who missed the apex for you?
There were a lot of people who missed the apex this weekend. I mean, I could say Alonso spinning on the way to the grid, for example. That was hilarious.
I missed that. What happened there?
Did you miss that?
Yeah.
No, that was totally a thing that happened. But I don't know. I feel really bad. But Raikkonen, he just, like, he was there, but he just kept on. He's been, maybe it's a bigger thing. It's over several weekends. I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about his ability, if you know what I mean, to be present in the race. I mean, he drove into Vettel. What on earth was that?
And he had a big off around turn two into farm as well. Yeah.
And he's been giving up positions that his team desperately need for, I don't know, let's call it credibility's sake. And I want to see this bleeding stop for him. And for the team's sake too, really, quite honestly.
A lot of people saying, well, Hamilton missing the apex in that incident with Verstappen again. You don't have to. You don't have to hit the apex. But yes, right, we're doing negative stuff, I guess. So who missed the apex? For you, DJ, who missed the apex?
I got to say it was Vettel coming out of the last corner like that. It was a weird spin. It was a weird way to do it. It was as he was coming on to throttle, not full application. It's just that same bad Vettel we saw the last couple years at Ferrari. I'm like you, Spanners. I want to see him do well, but that mistake was just a little inexcusable.
Van Jean, who missed the apex for you?
I'm going to give it to Max. And the reason I'm going to give it to Max isn't for whether he caused the accident or not. It's the fact of he could have avoided the accident, and he's the championship leader. And he completely blew his title lead today because he didn't want to give up the corner. He could have given up the corner, lived to fight another day, probably still could have won the race today because the Red Bull's been on fire, or only lost 7 points to Lewis. Instead, he lost 25.
Good point. How many times has Lewis this season lived to fight another day against Max? Like Imola. Imola's a good sort of case in point. He just went, do you know what? I'm not going to hold my ground around the outside of turn one into turn two. I'm just going to live to fight another day. So what do you think, Alex? If you're Verstappen's driver coach, what do you say to him? Do you go, right, wheel to wheel, win or bin? Or do you say, look at what Hamilton's doing. He is judging this event by event, incident by incident. And sometimes he's letting you go. Sometimes you need to let him go and just accept the 7 point deficit. What do you say to him?
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not a case. It was lap one, you know, and Max has arguably the fastest car. So he would get another chance to have a go at Lewis. And it's just that case of it's a little bit of maturity, and it's that kind of thing of you got to kind of let it go. And again, this isn't based on whether it was his fault or not in the accident. That's not what he's getting. That's not what he's getting my missed apex for. It's a case of he made a decision. And he could have made a decision to leave it a little bit wide and not get hit like Charles Leclerc did, like Lando did. He could have made that decision, but he didn't. And the decision he made was to go aggressive and to cut Lewis off. That was the decision he made. And that's what cost him 25 points in his championship league.
I'm going to give my missed apex award, and I might need some protection here because I'm going to give it to a pretty powerful dude. So if I get murdered, can you all just like go, oh, he got murdered? Like if it's suspicious, if there's like Red Bull cans lying around everywhere around the murder scene, can you guys like point out this video? Helmut Marko in calling for a suspension. That was just, oh, it's massively overdramatic to say that Lewis Hamilton should be suspended. When your driver is Max Verstappen, who is a wonderful, aggressive driver who takes things to the limit time after time after time and is more than happy to put himself in a situation where another driver has to choose between ducking out and points or contact and a crash, to then say that contact, which admittedly did have a pretty solid and severe reaction, to say that driver then in that, what is everyone is universally pretty much saying is a 60-40 one way or the other, 51-49 type of incident, to say that driver should then be suspended, I think he misses the apex for just a ridiculous rhetoric. What's it called? It's called hyperbole. That's the one, isn't it, Matt? Hyperbole. I'm accusing Helmut Marko of hyperbole. If I'm murdered by Red Bull cans, everybody just avenge my death.
I think in English, you can say it pretty much any way you want. And you've said it all the ways and they are all correct, my friend.
Exactly.
They are all
correct. If you say it all the wrong ways, you can't always be wrong.
Exactly. Although I do want to point out the chat room is very much wishing for Perez to get an honorable mention here for Apex missing.
Yeah. I think that was close. It was close. A close second. I think Perez had a shocker of a weekend.
Yeah. And again, kind of like Raikkonen, not the first one in recent succession either. So must mean he's about to get a contract. That's what I say.
Brilliant. Well, I think we've got a bit of a summer break coming up here, haven't we, Matt? So we will only do weekly shows. I think the next race is Hungaroring.
Hungary in 2 weeks.
Oh, is it 2 weeks? Is it? Okay.
Yeah, and then it's the summer break to Spa at the end of August.
Ah, I see. Well, I will do my best to bring us a great special guest between now and the Hungarian Grand Prix, and we'll have a bit of a pickup show, a bit of a new show on Sunday between the races as well, I think. And then we'll try and resume our patron-only streams where we do a little bit of a live stream, chat to our patrons, patreon.com/missedapex. That's the one. And we do a bit of a live stream where we let our patrons like call in and chat to us and contribute to the show. And people will only get that on their feed if they are patrons as well. So we might do one of those. We didn't do it this Friday, Matt, because I was enjoying hospitality of the greatest team to have ever graced F1, Ferrari, and they F1 and Ferrari are just synonymous, and Ferrari are F1. And I've always said that. I've been super consistent on that, Matt.
I've heard it stands for Ferrari 1, actually.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. There you go. Ferrari 1. And also a great thanks to Tom Wheatley as well, who looked after us and his team, who gave me and Brad Philpott a fantastic Friday there as well. You just had to be there. On Sunday, I think I'll do a little bit of a critique, a little bit of a breakdown of our experiences of what it was like to be in the Paddock Club of Silverstone. You had a recent experience as well in the New York E-Prix where you were the guest of Mr. Carter and friends, and you and Amanda also had a fantastic time. Luxury yes. that neither of us street rats are accustomed to.
Turns out we should have just been rich because it's better.
So we'll skip the pony for now for the sake of time, but we do have to give out...
Comment of the week.
Which one of our Slack commenters, Matt, has got your attention for comment of the week?
All right, we will start with Jaco Ligdom, whose name I am once again murdering, no doubt.
That's fine.
It's been three races since the last technical directive. About time Ferrari started finding pace again.
Banjin, have you got one too?
Mine is Rob Asher. Lewis only wins because he has the best fans.
Nice. Okay, I could do with some fans in the studio right now. Matt Trump is.
Matteo asking again, how many Ferrari hats equal one Mazepin hamper?
Oh, that's a good point. Like, I am totally open to a Haas hamper. Like, send it, man. Like, I've got no scruples. Do I strike anyone here as someone with morals? Who else is in line for comment of the week?
I think we've got two or three more if there's time. Apologies, lost my place momentarily. Tomato Mateo, making my life difficult with that at the end of this much whiskey. With how much concern and compassion Hamilton usually shows for other drivers not named Albon, I'm willing to give Hamilton the benefit of the doubt and believe he didn't know Max was in hospital.
Oh, no, well, that is certainly the claim. And I think, look, it is a serious matter. Max Verstappen does seem very upset on Instagram and Twitter that things were being celebrated when he was in hospital. I think the general message was that he was okay, and I hope he was okay. It's a big ask to not ask Lewis Hamilton not celebrate in front of the British fans, but I'm willing to hear the counter argument. I get if it's touch and go, if we don't know what condition someone is in, muted celebrations are appropriate, but all the reports we got were that Max was generally fine, Alex.
And as coming into the pits, or we heard when the race was red flagged, Lewis asked, "Was Max
he did.
Okay?"
Yeah, okay. And he was told that he was okay.
He was told
yeah,
he
okay,
was fine.
Okay, okay, I get that. Okay, Matt. Any more contenders?
I think we have. Well, this is actually hard because Chris Fonseca has given me three and I'm having to choose on the fly, he's just like Leclerc and his engine cuts.
Okay.
And so to borrow a little more time, I'm going to say underscore just to annoy Spanners a bit underscore. It says Vettel wants to pit. Oops, wrong pit entry.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he nearly took the wrong pit entry, yeah.
And then I think I'm going to go with Chris Fonseca's comment. Spanners calls it a racing incident. Is this a secret code that he's under duress?
I don't think I did call it in a racing incident. I just said I was struggling to assign blame. I will definitely settle at some point on whose fault I think it is. Matt, tell us who's the winner of comment of the week.
Oh, I think the winner has to be Matteo, asking again how many Ferrari hats equals one Mazepin hamper.
Well done. You are the winner of...
Comment of the Week.
Thank you for tuning in to Missed Apex Podcast. We are here only because of the support of our patrons, patreon.com/MissedApex. We have a hell of a time speaking to our patrons all throughout the week and broadcasting this live to you. We will be back, I think, next Sunday. There may be an interview during the week. Please follow my panel at Alex Van Gien, VANGEEN. If you search VANGEEN, you will find him on all platforms. Do follow our new friend, Daniel Clark, DJ. DJ, where are you at?
I am at the DJ Clark, or if you ever want to hear me yell about sim racing, jump over to GSRC on YouTube. We're racing pretty much every night, and I'm on comms for it.
Brilliant. Follow Matt Trumpets at MattPT55. His wife at A Weaver writes, follow me at Spanners Ready. I'm the best one and the show at Missed Apex. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Okay, it's so hot in the shed now, Matt. I don't want to play the game of look who's sweatiest anymore. I don't want to do it. You can't make me.
All right, fine. Fine, be that way. You probably win because it's not like it's only like, you know, modestly sweaty hot over here.
I can just put my arms down. Also, but you guys are used to it. Like, I went to Manhattan once in July and it is like it was 1,000 degrees. You've got concrete everywhere. It's like an oven.
Oh, and it has been crazy. It's actually cooler today. My daughter had a test yesterday in New Jersey and they had one of these flash flood thunderstorms.
Oh, yeah.
And when I went to get the car, because the thunderstorm had happened right when she was finishing up, there was water fountaining up out of the grates.
Oh, my God, they that sounds amazing. I want to go to New York. Wherever she is, I want to go because I'm just dying now. I'm in a box of heat and emotion.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.